victim to me. Everything we are around used to be is buried and gone. Now it's my turn to speak.
The views expressed on the following broadcast do not necessarily reflect those of KHLT, Take 12 Radio, or our affiliates. The opinions on this show should not be considered as medical, psychological, or professional advice and are those of the host, co-host, and guest. Take 12 Radio and KHLT Recovery Broadcasting are not affiliated with any particular 12-step fellowship.
Welcome to Entitled to Overcome, Exploring Solutions for Life Today, a presentation of Take 12 Recovery Radio. And now, here are your co-hosts, Dave Fleming and the Monty Man.
Sing it, Dave. Sing it.
Overcome.
Bring it on home, baby.
Don't cry victim to me.
Well, greetings one and all. Welcome to another episode of a production of Take 12 Recovery Radio entitled
To Overcome
Solutions for Life
Today.
With a certified alcohol and drug counselor level 2, Mr. Dave Fleming, and there he is over there. What's happening, Vid?
What's up?
Your camera just slid. Look at that. It's just sliding around.
It's on the move.
Sitting next to you there is
Shirley. I'm also licensed. Okay. Drug and alcohol counselor in Minnesota. See? My Minnesota hat. I'm representing
today.
Oh, you are wearing
a Minnesota hat.
I got inspired yesterday by the Swedish festival. In,
Scandinavian.
The Scandinavian, yeah.
It's Junction funny. City.
They've got this one of those, I forget what they call them, you know, the wooden, like, horses.
Trojan horse?
No. You know, the Swedish, like, they got flowers on them, and they got
bright colors
or whatever.
Yeah.
Reminded me of being back in Lindstrom, Minnesota. That's like the sister city for some city in Sweden or somewhere.
This sounds like a song to a 60s album or a 60s song. I caught mono at the Renaissance Fair.
What?
It's true. The Renaissance Fair in Marin County, California, years ago, is where I caught mono.
I don't know if I want to know the backstory of that one.
It was a
How
simple
do you get
quiz.
Mono from?
It was simple kiss from Maria Anaya. She was my date. She gave me a kiss.
Oh, so you was at the kissing booth at the
no,
Renaissance Festival?
It was just she gave me a kiss after I dropped her off, I think, from the Renaissance Festival, and I got mono. I got mono at the Renaissance. That just sounds like a song.
Okay.
The Renaissance Festival. Yeah, there you go. The topic this week: support from God. We're going to be talking about that. I want to mention. Real quickly, because he has paid for it, and we love him, too. And that's his book right here, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety by our friend Dr. Alan Berger. Listen, if you feel like you've gotten stuck in your recovery and it's all about going to meetings, drinking bad coffee, and listening to people whine about their day, and that's just kind of you've gotten on that cycle, and you just wonder, gosh, isn't there more to my recovery than this? Yes, you would be right. There is more than that.
Get out of spiritual kindergarten.
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe it's time to move up to first, second, third grade or kind of keep moving. But listen, this book, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety, is just packed with stuff that'll help you get unstuck from that kind of malady, if you will. And we didn't get clean and sober to become a glum lot, right, Dave? We got more to life than just abstinence. And you'll learn all about that in his new book. Listen, you can get his book at going to abphd.com, or you can find it on Amazon, 12 Essential Insights for Emotional Sobriety. Hey, listen, so last week or the week before, we talked about grief and walking through grief, and we had shared a little bit about Anala, the studio pup, her passing, and you the listeners were so gracious to allow me to kind of share my journey in that, and while we were in the studio, Dave passed a little video piece around, called God and Dog by Wendy Francisco. And I watched it after the show, and of course that caused me to tear up, you know. But it is so cute. If you can see, just listening to the audio, and we're going to listen to it right now, but just listening to the audio doesn't do it justice. You gotta see the little cartoon that goes with it. So just look up God and Dog on YouTube by Wendy Francisco. It'll be there. And gosh, there's so much wisdom, you know, in this little thing. So I want to start out for our icebreaker basically this week. I want to start out by sharing this with you. If you're going through a grieving time, especially when it comes to a pet, this just put a smile on your face. It really will. So check this out. Here's God and Dog.
I look up and I see God. I look down and see my dog. Simple spelling, G-O-D. Same word backwards, D-O-G. They would stay with me all day. I'm the one who walks away. But both of them just wait for me and dance at my return with glee. Both love me no matter what, divine God and canine mutt. I take it hard each time I fail, but God forgives. Dog wags his tail. God thought up and made the dog. Dog reflects a part of God. I've seen love from both sides now. It's everywhere. Amen. Bow wow. I look up and I see God. I look down and see my dog. And in my human frailty, I can't match their love for me.
Wendy Francisco, so much wisdom in that little piece, you know? I mean, my goodness, you know? If I could be more like Nala, it's like that Freebo song, More Like You, about his dog. You know, if I could be more like if we could be more like the animals, we'd be less animal. We'd maybe be more human like God meant us to be.
When I first heard that song, it was right? so grounding. That was probably, I mean, I don't remember exactly when, but I know it was early on in my recovery.
Yeah.
You know, so probably 10, 15 years ago at least, you know.
Sure.
And it was just—it's kind of like, you know, falling into a meditation for the day.
Mm-hmm.
It's just listening to that song. You know, it's very calming.
Yeah, you said it. It's grounding.
Yeah,
it's really grounding.
Right.
You know, if I listened to that, you know, every morning before I walked out the front door, I'd probably do better. It's that kind of stuff that we really need to be filling our heads with, not the garbage that there's so much garbage out there. I started watching a show. It's called The Sandman. I thought, oh, it's one of the DC comic characters. DC can be pretty dark.
Right.
They're even getting darker. I started to watch it, right? And I thought, man, it's too bad. It's the concept is really good, but it was so dark. I thought, why do I want to fill my head with this junk? An hour and a half of this, you know, and I couldn't watch it anymore, you know. But it was attracting. That's the thing about darkness. But the thing about light and things like this by Wendy Francisco, I just it brings so much more clarity just to all the fogginess of the world around you.
Right.
Yeah, it's very, very grounding. Okay, we're going to take a really sharp break. When we come back, we're going to be talking about this topic, support from God. So don't go away. Hold on.
overcome.
Hey, come on and have some fun with me. I'm the Monty Man, and I am the co-host of Walking Through the Language of the Heart, a workshop that we are developing, putting together, and currently broadcasting here at Take 12 Recovery Radio, which includes AA co-founder Bill W.'s writings in The Grapevine from 1944 to 1970. Walking Through the Language of the Heart with myself and Chris S., is broadcasting and posted every Friday until we're completely done with this wonderful book. Simply visit us at take12radio.com, click on the Recovery Workshops banner, and there you'll find Walking Through the Language of the Heart, as well as other recovery workshops that we've produced here for you for free at Take 12 Recovery Radio. Visit us once again, Take12radio.com, scroll down to the Recovery Workshops banner, click it, and you'll be well on your way. Welcome back to the show. Solutions for Life today with our friend Dave Fleming, who is in the house.
What's up?
Zippity
peoples.
If the YouTube thing turns out okay this time and you're watching, there's Sherwood sitting next to Dave.
What's up, Sherwood?
Hey, Sherwood.
I'm doing okay.
That's Sherwood, the Gnome Festival gnome. We got him at the Gnome Festival in Sherwood, so that's why his name's Sherwood.
Is that a city in Oregon?
Yes.
Nice.
Yes, it is. It's over there by Tualatin and all that stuff. And we stood in line for about 10 minutes. Huge line. I mean, I knew people loved gnomes, but I didn't realize how many. It's really a big deal. But it's one of those worlds that you don't really know exists until you get in it. And then you see it everywhere, right? So if you have a gnome and you don't like it, because there's people that hate them, and you've been wondering what to do with that silly thing, you're going to go take it down to Goodwill or throw it away, send it to me.
Right. Do you think, what was that? Did you think the popularity was due to that, I don't know,
the
commercial?
I mean the show, the movies? The gnome movies?
No. Do you think it was, well, I guess you could have started there, the cartoons, right?
Oh, like the Smurfs and stuff?
Yeah, but I mean, like, wasn't there, like a travel company, I don't really want to say their name, but...
Oh, yeah.
That had a gnome that, yes, you know...
The traveling gnome,
The traveling gnome.
Maybe, I don't know.
Or was it like, you know, crossover from Where's Waldo, and people would like... Well, wasn't there a thing where people were
still is.
Borrowing
still is.
Things off of people's lawns.
Yes,
and...
there still is. There's a whole organization out of Eugene, that Oregon, and I'm sure there's other ones around the country, that steal your gnomes, like particularly people that put them out in their front yard, right? They'll steal your garden gnome, and then they'll pass it on to somebody else who will pass it on to somebody else that is traveling to Paris or something, right? And they'll take a picture of it and then send you a ransom note. And then that gnome will travel. And this organization actually does that. They pay for the traveling, and sometimes they ship them. You get it back, but it's the whole, you're kind of poking the bear thing and irritating you. And you get your gnome back, but they make you suffer for a while. Yeah. So there's a whole thing about that.
Wow.
But gnomes have been around for centuries, you know. I mean, they've got some history in Germany. They've got some history in Denmark. Definitely a Scandinavian thing and all. So, gnomes are cool, man. I got to fix my microphone. Gnomes are cool. That's all I got to say. Gnomes are cool. Yeah. Anyway.
Are they related to the dwarfs?
No. Dwarfs are imaginary and fictional. Everybody knows that gnomes are real. Yeah, don't get him confused.
Don't get him confused.
Okay. So I thought this was an interesting read in The Man Within, Daily Devotions for Men in Recovery. It threw me back a little bit because I really wasn't expecting it out of this book. So let me share it with you. The scripture verse that they use is 2 Chronicles 16:9. For the eyes of the Lord run to and fro throughout the whole earth to show himself strong on behalf of those whose heart is loyal to him. In this, them. But for those who foolishly turn their back away from God, they're going to have turmoil. Mm-hmm. It's just part of the consequence of living without God. It's not that God's bringing the turmoil. You're in turmoil, and God's offering you a way out. And if you don't want to take it, that's fine. But don't get mad at him.
Right. And that's usually what happens. We blame it on God for our behaviors.
Yeah.
Or lack thereof.
So the reading goes on, and this is very interesting. A man told me about a situation he had been in recently. He had been struggling with sexual acting out with other men. Late one night, he found himself sitting in a park looking for an opportunity to act out sexually. While sitting there, he began to cry and think about how much he wished his father had cared for him. His father had died several years earlier without ever telling him that he loved him. As he was crying, he began to pray. Suddenly, he felt God's presence, and the loneliness lifted. He left the park and avoided the temptation to act out sexually. God wants to give us support. So many times, we do not recognize the support we have in him. In our times of desperation, he is the best support we can ever have. He is available 24 hours a day to help you in your recovery. God, help me to realize how strongly you want to support me in my recovery.
Wow, and I thought, man, so here's a topic that a lot of people don't want to talk about, but here's that thing where we a lot of times categorize sin, or we categorize our inappropriate behaviors. Well, I'm glad I don't do what you do, and I'm glad I'm not like that guy, or I'm so much worse than that guy. You have no idea my story, you know, that kind of thing. And the bottom line is, what is the solution? God wants to help us. God wants to support us, regardless of how ugly it may seem in other people's eyes. Maybe what I'm doing is even uglier still in your eyes. I mean, we're weird like that, humans are. So I think the author is using a pretty radical situation to bring to the point that it doesn't matter what you've done. It doesn't matter what you're doing. It doesn't matter what you may do. You can't get away from the love of God once you say, I surrender. It is. You're never too bad. You're never too alone. You're never. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
God always, and he wants to support you in that. Your thoughts, Dave?
Well, it just makes me think about, you know, years ago, right? Even before I like finally came to the point where I was going to change my life.
Yeah.
Because I went through that whole, you know, I surrender here, do the prayer, whatever, and be like, okay. When
went through the motions.
What time is it? Okay, I'm waiting. When's my life going to change? tick tock. So I remember making those, you know, statements and saying, you know, blah, blah. I mean, I tried going the opposite way.
Yeah.
For a period of time, and you know that I wasn't willing to go quite over the fence on that, so I went back and I thought, well, I'll try this God thing, and then it just was like nothing happened, right? Because I'm still trying.
You had
expectations? Figure things out. Well, no, I was stuck in that, you know, the whole control and powerlessness, and like I'm not powerless. I'm not, you know, I can control, right?
Oh,
make the choice to use or not use. I can make the choice to do this behavior or not do this behavior.
Yeah,
blah blah blah. I'm not gonna, you know, give up my
your control,
my power, because growing up we're powerless most of the time because we're just small little humans, and we have to follow whatever our parents or our elders, you know,
yeah,
direct us to do. Anyway, so my point is like those seeds I think started getting planted, and I don't even know when, what came first, the seed or the planting. And what I mean by that is there was a point in my life where my one of my best friends, Greg, who I hope is listening, he's actually in the hospital right now.
No.
On his third bout with cancer.
Oh, wow.
Anyway, I love you, brother, if you're listening. Get well soon. But he would take me to these NA meetings, right? He would say, and his way of like getting me to go to a meeting would be like, "Hey, dude, you want to go like meet some chicks?" I'm like, "What do you mean?" He goes, "Well, there's a dance on Friday night."
Right.
I'm like, "Dance? Like, we're not in high school anymore." He said, "No, check it out, man. It'll be fun. You'll have to. We've got to go to this meeting first, and then afterwards, we'll, you know, they have like food and, you know, all this."
See,
there's like a ton of people there. I'm like, cool, let's go, man. So
I'm thinking, are we going to have an Amway presentation before we go?
No, I mean, I kind of, you know, knew what the whole thing was about. But I was like, you know, okay, if I got to sit through this, that's all right. But that was kind of like, compare that to that, is like those seeds were planted early on before I even had any like desire to stop using. And I don't think so. I'm pretty sure that was God's way of getting my attention through my friend Greg.
Hmm.
Right?
Yeah.
And that's one of those things in my life that I know that I'm grateful to be able to. I know I'm all over the place today, but it helps connect me to being grateful to those people that I know that because I showed up and said something, just sharing my experience, strength, and hope,
mm-hmm.
Saved their life in that moment for that period of time.
Mm.
Well, Greg did the same thing for me back in the day, and it was God working through him. But mm-hmm. that was, I think, because I had cracked open that door, right?
So, yeah.
You know, I wasn't ready to make all these big changes, but God was in there, like, sprinkling water on the seeds.
Sure.
You know, and over time, you know, things became clearer and clearer. It was that little bit of sprinkling here and there that started it off, you know, that surrender.
Mm-hmm.
Just even saying the words, but not really entirely knowing what the heck that means or what, you know, even really believing it. Like, there's a part of, I remember there was a part of me that was like, I want something different in my life. Like, I'm miserable, you know. There's a part of me that was miserable, and so, okay, let's try this. And what I wanted, and I know I've told you this before, is like I wanted that spiritual experience where all of a sudden, you know, the tree started on fire.
Yeah,
and it was talking to me, and then the
ground opened,
the fire
up,
went out, and the tree was like not burned at all.
Right,
you know, like one of those experiences.
So you were that guy that's in that old story about the boat and the helicopter and all that, right? You're looking for God, but you're looking for him on your expectations. You're looking for the tree to blow up. You're looking for the ground to open up.
I don't.
Well, you were looking.
I would have jumped into the boat and been on my way. Or I would have like jumped into the helicopter and been on my way. I'm like, I'm not dumb. Like, I'm a smart guy. So,
but he was sending you signs.
But if there was a flood and like a boat comes by or a helicopter, I'm going to jump on it.
But the point of that story is
I would say that's God sending me a helicopter if I'm at that point.
Right. But you were looking for it on your terms, though, right? You were looking for the burning bush.
No, I wasn't looking for it. I was just expecting that if that's actual reality, or that's the truth, that, oh, you just say the words or say the prayer and then poof, you're a Christian. And then I guess I was expecting something like that to happen because that's what. You know,
is people, that what you heard?
That's what people tell you. Like my grandmother even said to me, like, all you have to do is, like, ask for help.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Help.
And then what happens?
Nothing.
Right.
Right? Because they don't fill in the rest of the story.
Or nothing happens that the rest you, that you can tell.
The rest of the story is you actually have to do something.
Sure. Well, and I think depending on where we're looking, I mean, I think God's at work. I mean, our closing song that we're going to listen to in a little bit here is called God is in this Story. And so I think he's in our story. We don't see it for a long time.
That's my point.
Yeah. But he's in there working even before we have any desire whatsoever to change.
That prayer that I used to do, right? If there's a God and you want to work in my life, give me a sign. And then there'd be a sign. But I didn't see it as a sign, right?
Yeah.
And so looking back, I could see things that connected the dots where God intervened.
Yeah.
But I wasn't on the same wavelength at the time.
You know what's interesting is, and I posted this on Facebook the other day. I wish I was smart enough to come up with these sayings, but I read this somewhere. I don't remember where. Was that the circumstances you're asking God to change? Maybe the circumstances He's using to change you. And I read that and I was like, ooh, ouch. Yeah, that makes a lot of sense, because a lot of times I want God's support and He is supporting me. He's already there and He's supporting me in the way that He knows is best for me. But I'm not aware of it at all, or I'm not happy with that. God, don't you know I want you to do it this way?
Right.
You know, and in that, I become kind of agnostic, right? I'm doubting Him and I'm questioning Him. But that's why I love that chapter, We Agnostics. I can identify
right?
with that.
It goes back to the old behavior, like if everyone would just do things my way, everything would be fine,
you know? And if everybody would just play their part in the play,
right.
I, as the director, would be so much better of a director. The problem with that is everybody else in the play thinks they're the director. Now we got a major train wreck.
Too many chiefs and not enough Indians.
All you got to do is go to a 12-step meeting and see all the directors. It's great, but aren't you glad that we're all meeting together working on our stuff? So support from God, I think it's available 24/7. It just might not show up the way you're looking for.
Right. That 100%.
Yeah. Yeah,
I learned that, and I only learned it because I was open to it.
Yeah,
because I was, you know, I was asking the question, like, give me a sign,
mm-hmm.
and then I was open to it, like, okay, today, like, show me what I need to work on, like, point me in the direction, give me the tools that I need. And for me, because I was only focusing at that time on the 24 hours at hand, when things came up that pointed in one direction or another, I would say, okay, I would look for other qualifiers. To me, that meant that there was some confirmation in which direction
uh-huh.
or what I needed to work on, right? We talk about this when we go to meetings and we... You know, we hear the same topic like all week long and think,
right.
Okay, well, that must be something I need to work on. That's kind of how, in a way, you know, different way of saying it is how that showed up in my life.
That is so true. Mm. My sponsor had to remind me on several occasions when I would whine about that. You know, well,
right.
You know, maybe you're not getting it yet. Maybe that's why you keep hearing it over and over again. You know, because in fact, I remember one time. His name was Doug. He said, that's funny. That's not what I'm hearing.
Exactly. That's what I was just going to say. If you, I can almost guarantee if you surveyed, like, you know, everybody in the room or
right.
even half of them and asked them what they got out of it, it'd be something
it'd be totally different.
It'd be different.
Yeah. Yeah. So in this description of this gentleman who is struggling with sexually acting out, it's interesting. In while he's sitting there in the park, thinking about involving himself in this outward manifestation of something that's obviously deeper inside of him, he starts crying over the fact that. He never got confirmation from his dad that he was supportive of him, that he loved him. And I thought, yeah, well, isn't that the truth that, you know, we talk about symptoms all the time. You know, he was about ready to engage himself in a symptom, but there was something much more deeper going on in his life, you know. And I think sometimes we want God to take the symptoms away, but we don't want him to work on the things that are fueling them, because, don't you know, that's a little too sensitive. I don't want to go there.
Well, I would bet that this person wouldn't even have a clue on why he's acting out the way he's acting.
Probably
out.
Not.
So
most people don't,
you
right?
You can't fix something you don't know what's broken.
Yeah, that's right. That's right. And we need help with that much of the time. And there's no shame in that. I know a guy right now who's been through a year residential program, and he's going to continue for another year. And he felt embarrassed and ashamed. I said, hey, this isn't like a restart. This is just a continuation. I mean, there's people that can jump into like a 12-step meeting and get involved. And within a few months, man, they're rocking it. There are other people, it takes a long time to peel that onion. Mm-hmm. And a year really isn't that long, considering all the years we've been building the onion, right? Yep. And he realized, I said, what a gift you have, right, to continue in this walk and continue to, I think John Bradshaw, remember that guy?
Mm-hmm.
Who used to say, uncover, discover, recover. You know, that's a process.
Right.
And we got to do that. And so many times, I mean, I know in my own life, I didn't know why I was doing a lot of stuff I was doing.
Well, in a situation where you're in a program like that for a year, most people are going to be like, this is just from my personal opinion and experience, right?
Yeah.
It's like, okay, I've got 2 weeks left, right?
And yeah.
I'm going to be out of here, and right. I'm going to go... You know, first thing I'm going to go do is, you know, I'm going to go out to the, I don't know, Sizzler or something, right? I'm going to have a good meal, different than what I've had for the last year. I'm going to go and see my friends. But the bottom line is basically I'm leaving here and I'm going back to the same environment that I was in before.
Right.
Right. Or I'm going to go live with my parents and they're part of the problem. But it's better than going back to being homeless or going back to the significant other that's still using drugs, right?
Right.
And so instead of saying, okay, wait a minute here, my options are not very good, so let's take some more time and continue to work on myself and then look at building some opportunities or seeing what opportunities are out there. Because now I've just spent this last year working on the baseline on my new life.
Yeah.
And now I got to continue to build upon that and learn some new skills. And who knows what's going to happen, right?
Sure.
And that's, you know, where you see some of those guys at the last minute change their mind and say, well, I want to stay. Or they change their mind at the last minute and say, nope, I'm out of here, right? Because for whatever reason, right? They get tempted and then sometimes that, you know, bad things happen, right? How many people do we know that within 6 months after leaving the program, they're dead?
Yep.
I mean, it's...
Yep.
It is what it is, you know? I don't want to sugarcoat it.
You know, and in this particular case, this gentleman, I said, what's the biggest revelation for you right now? And he says, I've been lying about so many things. Mm-hmm. And this is the first time I actually feel safe about telling the truth about it. I said, okay, so it took you a year to get there. There's no shame in that. You're there now.
Right.
You know, that congratulations. You're on different footing now. That's right. Awesome. That's awesome. And this guy went back to the people that were involved in his residential program, the other clients, if you will, and made amends to them and told them, I've been lying about my personal story. I've been I've been he was flowering it up.
Oh, yeah.
Making it look, that's what we do. We either minimize or we over
maximize.
We, you know, well, I'm way worse than that. You ought to know, find out what I did.
Right, right.
You know, and one of the things was, oh, yeah, I joined a gang when I was 9 or something. Yeah. He goes, I didn't join no gang, man.
Gang was me and my buddy.
You know, and it was so refreshing, you know. Because truth be told, there's been aspects of my life it took years for me to get honest about.
Right.
With myself, you know, and say, that isn't entirely true. Now, is it, Monty?
Well, you know? That is probably one of the, you know, it's up there with, you know, communication, right, issues is lying because, and it is more along the lines of in order for me to survive, I have to tell a story that... Yeah. People are going to look at me in a better light or, you know, I'm either that or it's going to be dark. So they stay away from me. Right. I set up the walls.
Yeah.
Right? And it's a protection, you know, it's a way to protect ourselves. And there's been a handful of guys that I've worked with over the years that is like one of the things that, in like, you know, 90-day program that I'm, you know, thinking about these people that I had to call them out in the beginning,
mm-hmm.
you know, and some changed, some didn't. One guy didn't do anything but talk about that whole experience the rest of the time he was there. He's like, no one's ever called me out on my BS. And, you know, that's like, you know, he's like, he was dumbfounded by the fact that someone actually saw through his BS and
right.
called him on it in front of everyone. Right. And then he had to actually look at it. Cause now it's like, I pulled back the curtain, right.
Yeah.
Off of the windows and let the light in. So he got some godson, some vitamin D, but, that's one of those big things because when we get into a program, typically we're in protection mode. Like, I just want to get through this. I just want to survive. I just want to tell people, like, minimal stuff about me. I want to, you know, I don't want anybody to think badly of me. I want everybody to be like, oh, yeah, there's a, you know, that guy's cool, man. We don't want to be like that guy.
Right, right.
And then after they leave the program, they fall apart and be like, what the heck?
In the Big Book of Alcoholics Anonymous, in How It Works, reading from page 60 of the third edition, it says, and this is right after the steps have been read, it would sound like a pretty big order, especially if you're brand new.
Right.
Right. It says, many of us exclaimed, what an order. I can't go through with it. And then it says these three words, do not be discouraged. And that gave me the ability to go, okay. And I caught it right away that, you know, I didn't have to do this thing overnight.
Yeah, but it's still big because it's like, we just list these 12 things.
Yeah.
And then, oh, don't be discouraged. It's like,
well, but then it goes on to say, no one among us, so you're not alone.
Right.
No one among us has been able to maintain anything like perfect adherence to these principles. We're not saints. The point is that we're willing to grow along spiritual lines. So there's a lot to be said about willingness. Now, willingness doesn't mean you just sit there and go, well, I'm willing, and then don't participate.
Right.
You know, but if you're willing to recognize your need for a power greater than yourself, then you move into being willing to receive some support from that power. You know, and it's, again, it's peeling back the onion. It's a process. And some people, it's sometimes quickly, sometimes slowly. But it always materializes, it says, if we work for it. In other words, if we participate,
right.
You know. And I'm wondering in this story of this guy in the park, I wish I could be a fly on the wall and see, what did he do next? Okay, well, he drove away. We know he didn't participate in what mm-hmm. he wanted to act on it. But what did he do next? When you and I are hit with something that shakes our world, like this shook this guy, what's our next step? What do we do? Do we go home and sulk? Do we
What does the prayer say at the bottom of the page?
Yeah, so there you go. The prayer says, God, help me to realize
how strongly you want to support me. Wow.
There's that word support again.
Yeah. Yeah. So it's and that would suggest that something that needs to be lifted up, held up, something that doesn't have the ability on its own power to do it.
Yeah.
You know, and then God help me to realize your willingness to do that. Because we have been taught, at least I was, or my perception was anyway, that God was waiting to hit me over the head with, you know, bad boy, go to your room, that kind of thing. When all the while, the truth was, he wanted to support me. He wanted to encourage
me. Yeah, and where did that all come from, that whole, like...
punishing thing?
You know, God's a bully that wants to, like,
right.
burn you with a magnifying glass or whatever.
It came from Monty Python's Life of Brian.
I mean, we don't even have to go there, but I think somewhere back in the past, they made good things bad and bad things good to scare people for whatever reason they were trying to whatever. But all I can say is that I know it once. I always say this, right? Give it a chance.
Mm-hmm.
Like, even if you have no clue or you don't really want to do it, you know, you don't want to surrender, right? At least try to, you know, they talk about fake it till you make it. Some people don't like that term.
I don't like it, but there's some wisdom there, right? Isn't there?
So if I focus on the next 24 hours at a time.
Yeah.
And I just show up and do the next right thing.
Right.
That's pretty simple. And I my prayer could be like, if there's a God and you want to work in my life, like, point me in the direction of.
Yeah.
Like, show me that you're working in my life. And you may not notice things right away, but eventually, if you're paying attention, you stay on the path, things will be revealed. I still look back and think this is the craziest thing in the world that I actually chose to do this, right? I'm going to do this sobriety thing, right? I'm going to do it as it's suggested. I'm going to go to the meetings. I'm going to get a sponsor. I'm going to
do all the stuff.
I'm going to read the material. I'm going to do the steps, how they're supposed to be done. And I'm going to do this to the best of my ability for an entire year. And at the end of that year, if my life doesn't change, I can always go back to doing what I was doing.
Right.
Because, you know, what else is there?
Why not, right? It's just like, why not?
Yeah, let's. I've tried everything else. Let's try this. And, like, literally, my life changed, like, right away.
Yeah.
You know, and the first time that I actually, like, I don't know if somebody else read the promises or I read the promises. I think I read the promises, and it was the first time I actually heard it on top of that.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going, like, when is this supposed to happen? Like literally, like, half to three quarters of these things have already happened to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm like, am I, like, overthinking it? Is my pride getting in the way? I'm thinking, oh, yeah, I'm better than this. But no, that actually, because I was at that point in my recovery that I was being honest and I was doing everything the way that I was supposed to do it. So I was thinking, I even held back thinking, well, you know, maybe I'm, like, reading too much into this. Did I really, like, do this or do I really do that? But I was like, no, this is, like, and it's the craziest thing. So I'm like, I'm just going to keep doing this.
Mm-hmm.
Like, why would I stop?
Mm-hmm.
Like, I always hear about people relapsing. Well, why did you relapse? Well, I stopped going to meetings. I stopped doing this. I stopped doing that. Okay, so why would I stop doing those things if I want to stay sober?
Yeah.
And my life is going well.
Right.
Or at least it's better than it was.
Well, I think you said it. I think you were actually doing the work. You were participating.
Right.
You know, you've heard me say a million times, God won't render us white as snow without our cooperation. You were cooperating. And as you cooperate, you see results. You just do. And if you don't, I got to wonder, are you following directions? It's pretty simple.
I was, my whole life, I had been always, like, trying to, you know, you think about it from the ADD perspective, right?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is in play. Mm-hmm. Yesterday, today, and tomorrow, mm-hmm. and everything tied up in that.
Yeah.
Well, when I got into recovery, that all went away. All it was what's going on right now today.
Mm. Wow. Yeah. So you looked back and you saw, I'm going to guess probably before you even got to the ninth step, because those are the ninth step promises I think you're referring to. And I believe that, you know, yes, they're the ninth step promises, but I too experienced some of those promises coming true before I right. got there. But if those aren't coming true by the time you finish your ninth step, you probably haven't been working the program the way it's lined out.
Well, and sometimes it's because you haven't been done a thorough and searching.
You haven't been
inventory.
Thorough, right? Which
you haven't
you
done
haven't
a step four completely,
right?
You know, exactly. I didn't share this, and I didn't share that, and I. Yeah, there's definitely not going to share that.
Right.
Right? So that's what we do. So, because that was the first time that I did a four-step. And then second time I was in the residential treatment, I did another one, you know, everything that I could remember that day.
Yeah.
Like, I wasn't going to, like, spend, you know, I hear all these different stories. And then I hear people doing, you know, a four-step, like, you know, once a year or 50 times, or I'm like, why? It doesn't say that in the book.
No.
And why would you put yourself through that? Like, and then I'm like, okay, step 10 says daily. So if I'm reflecting at the end of the day, what's going on?
Yeah.
What I've done, good or bad? Do I owe an amends? And then I leave it there. I mean, why would I do another?
You can take care of that thing pretty much right away. Right. You don't have to have 500 million people to make amends to.
Why
at the
would
end of the
I
year.
Do a, I know, an inventory? It's like, come yeah. on.
You know, and in fact, it talks about, I mean, I did.
I mean, I know what that is. It's people aren't honest. They're not
right.
They're not surrendering.
I attempted very poorly with half of my effort to do a four-step the first time.
Yeah.
When I really did it right, and my sponsor says, "Hey, are you ready to do this the way it says?" I go, "Okay, yeah." And I did it right. I only had to do a one formal working of my four step. Later on, I knew how to do spot inventories. I knew how the book says it. You know, intuitively we know how right. to handle situations that used to baffle us.
Right.
That is a wonderful gift. I can stop in the middle of my dysfunction. I can catch myself. I can take care of this before it turns into a resentment, before it turns into an amends that needs to be made. And if I don't, I can make the amends now. I don't have to wade through a bunch of stuff anymore. I can do it. I can promptly admit when I'm wrong. You know, I couldn't do that before, but now I can, and it's an amazing thing. I have not gone through steps 1 and 12 every single year. I can apply and implement the principles in those spiritual disciplines on a daily basis.
Right.
You know, as they become needed for me to apply. And it's a wonderful thing. You know, I mean, I don't have to walk around with a 3x5 card and say, excuse me, while I work a step on that. You know what I mean?
Right.
Now, I did it one time. And if you're really in recovery, that's a good thing to do.
It's funny at watching people's reaction, especially if you like you make the amends like almost immediately.
Yeah.
Like I remember this was like a couple weeks ago. And I probably shouldn't have done it this way, but it's just the way it came out. If somebody asked me a question, and I gave him an answer.
Yeah.
And then I thought about it. I'm like, crap. And then I come back and I said, sorry, I lied. Like, I didn't actually do that. I almost did, but I didn't. I ran out of time. So
yeah.
But it was like, they just kind of looked at me like, what?
Did they look at you like, well, that's no big deal? What are you making amends for? I've had people do that with me. Well, it's important to me.
Well,
it might
I mean,
not
they,
to
didn't,
them.
They didn't look at it as like being an amends, but like, why would you like lie about something? They're looking at me like, why would you lie about something like that? Or why would you say that you lied about something like that? Like,
right.
People don't usually talk like
people
that.
People are surprised.
But I was like, no, I have to take responsibility like right away, because otherwise that will be one of those things that gets
me nodded
stuffed down a little bit.
Yeah.
And be like, well, you know, that was, you got away with that one.
Right.
Even though it wasn't no big deal, really. But, yeah.
I hear you. I hear you. So, are there consequences for not leaning on the power that's greater than you to help you solve your problems? Yeah. You God's a gentleman. He's not going to force that support on you. I don't know, brother. I'd much rather lean on the support of this power in my life than on my own intellect, although I don't always live like I mean what I just said.
Right.
But truth be known, he never lets me down, and he's never late. He's late on my timeline, but not on his.
Well, that's not that's just your expectation.
That's just my own expectation.
And I was going to say, you know, that the hardest part, I think, is, you know, living this life is the time when it's just, you're just doing the day to day, you know, you're just living life. You're going out and doing things, because there's a period of time, at least for me,
right,
where it was like every time I prayed, boom, it came true. Like God showed me, like, all the time, here, I'm intervening this way and I'm intervening that way. And here's a confirmation that you did this. And so now there's a confirmation from this area or that area. It's like at least, you know, twice a month, at least, if not sooner.
Yeah.
And then you get to a point where, okay, so now I want you to, like, go to Oregon. I'm like, are you sure? Like, let's make it impossible, right? Got to have a place to live, got to have a job, got to have this, got to have that. God had to put all those things into place. So now we're in Oregon, we get to Oregon, and it's like, okay, now it's like nothing's happening like it was before. So
right.
I'm like, okay, did we misread the signs? Are we?
I know, we're like that.
Like, when something, like, I had to come to the, I had to go back and start, you know, diving into, you know, the word and other things, and look at it from the perspective of sometimes God just has us kind of in this holding pattern. I don't know how else to say it. But basically, okay, so now we're molded into this, you know, this this, you know, person of God or whatever. It's one of the disciples. Go out and help some people, right? And so now you're out helping people, and you've been not seeing anything major like happen before for a while, but it's not because of your lack of doing things. Sometimes it's because there's other things in the world or in our world that have to be worked on or put into place for the next opportunity that God has for you to open up or to fall into place.
Yeah. You know, the prime example of that is guys that tell me, you know, oh man, I hope God's got a woman for my life. And I go, you know what?
It's like the worst thing you can do.
It's like, dude, what if God is preparing her for you and you get in the way and you jump ahead of God? That's a train wreck. Or what if she is ready for you, but you're not ready? He hasn't got you done ready for her yet.
Well, and so how are you going to know? Someone like that is going to basically find someone, usually the first one that pays them
the
any attention.
Yeah.
Right?
Yep.
And they're going to go, hey, they're like me. They're just as broken, if not worse.
Oh, it's a train
wreck.
And
so we're back to the same old behaviors.
I'll tell you when I knew. When I stopped looking.
Exactly. That's what I was going to say. When you stop looking and you start focusing more on yourself to better yourself. And because who's going to want to be with someone like you when you're a mess and a half?
I know, right? And then it just happened.
Right.
When I wasn't looking, it happened. It's like, what?
Right.
You know, it's wild. Well, listen, we're out of time. The topic, support from God. He wants to support you. He supports those who are loyal to him. Does being loyal mean you do it perfectly? No, but it means you have a willingness to go in the direction that he wants you to go, because it's for your good. In Dave's story, in my story, and even if you don't know it yet, in your story, God is in this story. Here is the song by that title. And this is performed by Katie Nicole and Big Daddy Weave. God is in this story.
This torn up pages in this book, words that tell me I'm no good, chapters that defined me for so long. But the hands of grace and endless love dusted off and picked me up, told my heart that hope is never gone. God is in this storm.
Katie Nicole and Big Daddy Weave. God is in this story. Listen, have you been struggling? Have you needed a comforting arm? A shoulder? Well, God will be that for those who are loyal to Him. Now, being loyal to God doesn't mean you do it perfectly, but it means on a daily basis we turn our will and our lives over to the care of Him as we continue in our understanding and growth in our relationship with Him. God is in your story. All you need to do is open your eyes and be willing. Until next time, this is the Monty Man, along with Dave Fleming and the rest of the Take 12 Recovery Radio family, reminding you that because God is in your story, you are entitled to overcome.
This has been a broadcast of KHLT Recovery Broadcasting.